back with episode 668 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I'm just dying for a coffee.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I've got nothing because I missed the lower end of the shows this week. Oh well, I'll be here for the discussions.
And, well, if you were looking for an episode that might get into some of the intricacies of copyright law, you're in the right place. Because we do have an open topic that's going to get a little bit weird. But, for us? Wow, what a surprise. But we do have to finish all of the episodic discussion. As Gary said, we do have some open topics and feedback to get through. So, Edmund, just the general disclaimer.
Absolutely. When we're talking about episodes, we will discuss whatever we like. So you'll be spoiled if you haven't watched them.
That's right. That's right. So we are going to go ahead and get into the next topic here. And that is the 100, Season 3, Episode 5, Hakeldama, I think. Anyway, Clark's hope for peace is dashed by a new threat, and Raven becomes a target. Meanwhile, Murphy runs a dangerous con. And this one came in at an average of 7.67. Edmund, any particular thoughts on this episode?
Continued machinations and political intrigue is really liking the way they are they're sort of upping the ante now of the grounders versus the I guess we don't really have the pike heads, I guess you could call them, the show is just continuing to do a good job of exploring these this intricate interplay between not making it just a straight grounders are bad, arc is good, but within each group, it's with the continuing machinations is just quite nicely done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would agree with all of that. Next on the list is iZombie Season 2, Episode 14, Eternal Sunshine of the Caffeinated Mind. An incredibly optimistic coffee shop owner is murdered. Liv uses the victim's sunny outlook to help Clive solve the crime. Meanwhile, Blaine sees things go from bad to worse, and Drake is forced to cancel plans with Liv due to a run-in with Seattle's Finest. Yes. And this episode came in also at an average of 7.67. And yeah, don't cross Liv when it comes to Major, man. This is the first time I think that they've had a case during an episode where the person got away.
Yes, well, considering it's Abigail Hobbs from Hannibal, that's not necessarily so surprising. She has learned at the master's knee.
I suppose that's true.
But I also want to mention, the little twist they introduced with Blaine, for me kind of redeemed what had seemed just a sort of a generic beefcake character, revealing that he's actually a CI for the police and is working on his own to try and bring down Mr. Boss, then basically trying to warn him off the whole relationship with Liz, I thought was a nice little twist to a character that was that really was just feeling rather generic.
Mm-hmm. Quite true. Okay, next on the list is Bitten, Season 3, Episode 2, Our Own Blood. Elena doesn't know what to make of the mysterious werewolf Sasha when he claims to be her father. Meanwhile, Clay readies Stonehaven for a possible attack from the Spanish by recruiting new pack members. And this one came in at an average of 7.5. And finally, we have Sleepy Hollow, Season 3, Episode 11, Kindred Spirits. The Kindred returns, but the team can't figure out why he's now a force for evil. Meanwhile, Ichabod learns that his romance with Zoe has unintended consequences.
Yes.
And this one came in at an average of 7.5, and poor Ichabod.
Although certainly once they revealed the Kindred's mate, I immediately started thinking of this as Bride of Kindred. So
yes.
the Frankenstein parallels and metaphors were getting way too obvious at that point, right down to the white hair. But...
very true, very true. And when the Kindred is getting more action than Ichabod in an episode, that's when you know that his love life is on the skids.
Yes.
Quite honestly, Kindred needs some serious dermatology? Yes.
Yes.
That's the word I was looking for. The Kindred was never one of the best concepts they had on the show. It didn't quite could have. They kind of just left it out there to dangle. So I'm glad that they finally resolved this one.
Yeah, well, and I also like the yes, apparently the writers really did agree with you, since they gave him a happy ending, and then they literally got poofed.
Yes, exactly. Just get him out of here. Get him out. Whatever you got to do. All right, that's it then for the episodic discussion, and we can then move on to a little bit of feedback, just a little bit this time around, as we get this little comment here from Danger Mouse, who says, if anybody's into video games in the horror genre, with a splash of the supernatural, I would recommend Until Dawn. It's a great deal of fun, and the story is based on the choices you make throughout the game. I certainly enjoyed it, and you'll recognize many of the actors that play characters in it. Yes, and Danger Mouse, I heard about this game back in the fall, and a lot of people were playing it and having a good time. And more importantly, there were, for the people who don't want to try to play it or can't play it, there are a number of Let's Play videos and Twitch stream videos of playthroughs of this game. And I know a lot of people that were just entertained by those, where you could at least watch the game being played and watch people's reactions during the game, which was almost as entertaining. So Until Dawn is... definitely one of those games that I've heard a lot about. And I guess it's only for the PS4 and me. I guess it's an exclusive to the PS4, but I'm not certain of that. I don't know if it's on Steam, for instance, or anything like that. For those who don't have a PS4, I don't know what your options are. But yeah, for those who do, that's probably a game up your alley if you're into the horror genre and some of these kind of choose your own adventure type games. Jeez, I'm dating myself by calling it that, aren't I? But anyway, just slightly.
Flip to page 12.
Yep. Flip to page 42, The Meaning of Life. Anyway, that's it for our feedback this particular week, so we can get into open topics. But I actually had one, if I can find it again. It kind of disappeared on me. Hold on that, Gary, did you have any open topics for this week?
I did get to catch up with you guys and see Deadpool. I thought the storyline was actually very compelling. I thought it also to be a little bit ludicrous at times. But
and this surprised you or not?
Actually, that this story was so strong did surprise me.
Okay.
it was honestly, when you put away all the crude jokes, curses, naked butts, and everything else, it was a solid story. And I don't want to say that's what sold it, because I know it was the dumb slapstick humor, but I was pleasantly surprised to see such a strong storyline in it. So, way to go. And of course, I never mind seeing Marina Baccarin. So, hey.
Then you do see her, a lot of her. Yeah, well, I mean, this is Deadpool, but you see how I meant that, like, I think, Gary, you were the one who actually asked me, like, when I said that the story was deceptively simple. And you were saying, oh, does that mean that there's the plot's not very good or whatever else? And now maybe you know what I was saying, is that, no, it's a very straightforward story.
Yes.
But it's a good one. It really kind of keeps you engaged throughout. And it gives you that backbone for Ryan Reynolds as Wade to just go completely insane. So it works on all those levels. Edmund, have you been able to see the movie yet?
I have not yet.
Oh, okay. So we won't spoil too much more about it.
As I said last time, they're, you don't need to. Yeah. I'm the one who gives the disclaimers. I give you free license.
Yeah, it's you could be spoiled as much as you want to on this movie, and it doesn't matter because it's more the experience than it is the.
Seeing lots of Marina Baccarin just got mentioned, so I think that kind of trumps everything anyway.
There you go. Yep. Green Lantern managed to find his way into Inara's bed.
Well, what did I hear? That this was going to be this was going to be the redemption of Ryan Reynolds as superhero, as well as Ben Affleck as superhero. So we'll have to see.
Yes. One down, one to go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, we can only hope by the end of the month that we feel the same way, but we shall see. All right. So the topic that I had here, this is a little bit, we've kind of touched on this before, and yes. Certainly Gary has talked about the whole Axanar project for the fan film that is being done for Star Trek, and the fact that they got sued. And now there's a little bit of a twist. Apparently Paramount is going to have to actually explain Star Trek in court, or they could lose their copyright law or lose their claim against the copyright in this particular case. Paramount's in court trying to stop the production of a fan-made crowdfunded film on the grounds that it violates the studio's ownership of the copyright. Launched in 2014, the film Prelude to Axanar covers the missions of the first Federation warship and takes place during the childhood of James T. Kirk, but well away from him. The problem with all that is that it definitely shares a universe with every other Star Trek film and movie. The question becomes whether or not Star Trek is the universe or what happens within it. Yeah, stop for a second. It gets complicated. The reason this issue has come now is that most fans don't give a damn what the answer to the question actually is, which is why, over the course of three different Kickstarter campaigns, the Axanar team has raised over $1 million. It's seeking some finishing funds. Enter the lawyers. Obviously, they can claim to own Star Trek because they acquired the series from Lucille Ball's Desilu Productions in the late 60s. Now, they've been merged with CBS, and that's how we're getting both a new TV series and a continuing film franchise. But the Axanar team has a card up its sleeve. The Paramount lawsuit claims that this infringes upon thousands of copyrights, and the Axanar team has asked the simple question, which ones? It's brilliant. Because Star Trek now exists over several different universes, time periods, and casts. It's not that simple. So the universe is so spread out, it's almost impossible to find what Star Trek, quote-unquote, actually is. To that end, the burden is now on Paramount to explain what Star Trek is in a legal sense, which I think is great. So, as Hollywood Reporter notes, the defenders also nod to new characters, sets, plots, and Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and various films to arrive at the argument that Paramount and CBS aren't doing an adequate job recognizing the vast differences between the film's television episodes, nor meeting minimum pleading standards. Producers of the crowdfunded film argue that they shouldn't be left guessing about what they've infringed, nor should they be required to sift through every movie and TV episode to determine the claims against them. So, essentially, Paramount's going to have to go in and link every little piece of the Star Trek story and world and universe in order to figure out exactly how Axanar overlaps with that and enumerate every single one of them in order to win this case. So as Bronstam said a couple episodes ago, this is why the whole decision by Disney to obliterate the extended universe for Star Wars was actually a really good move, because the lines for Star Wars now are pretty tightly delineated. You know exactly where what is and is not, quote unquote, in universe. So the studio can encourage fan made stuff all the time without worrying if there's any type of copyright infringement. Paramount can't say that right now. And actually, it's a really I guess it all boils down to, if you're going to say that somebody is infringing upon thousands of different copyrights, you're going to have to explain which ones those are. And good luck.
And that really seemed like a sort of rookie mistake or some sort of knee-jerk reaction, because if you're saying someone's infringing, you have to say what they're infringing of. You can't use vagaries like thousands of things. It just no legitimate lawyer would really put that forward and not sort of say, no, you have to tell me what you're suing us for, you know, is basically what it comes down to. And in some ways, it might not be that hard to prove. I mean, they could easily say Captain Garth and cite an episode. I mean, it's not rocket science to come up with at least the, you know, some of the main things, but there, you know, there's other things too. They want them to show how they own Star Trek.
Yeah.
Which is actually an interesting argument all in of itself. Star Trek has been handed around between studios for the last about 40 years in at least 4 to 5 distinct shifts. And one has to wonder if all the I's were dotted and all the T's crossed for every bit of the property. So, you know, then, you know, take, for example, novels. Who's got the novel rights? You know, did somebody forget to include them as they transferred from Viacom to Paramount to from Chris Kraft Industries? Who knows? There's been, because it's been handed around. So I found that sort of novel and annoying. Prove you own it first. So, and so these are all things before the lawsuit actually even starts. And then, and I don't want to go on too much, although I am pretty well versed in it at this, well, reasonably well versed in it at this point. There's also the whole argument that they're suing them for something that does not exist. There has been technically none of the movie shot, although they did do a sort of teaser sampler that was about 2 or 3 minutes long that supposedly will be worked into the movie as a scene, but the actual film is not finished. So how can you even count the number of infractions that they've incurred when it doesn't exist yet? So that's another one of their several sort of clarifications / arguments that they're making before trial even begins. And also, as a side note, there are literally hundreds of Star Trek fan films out there already.
Mm-hmm.
And not one has received any cease and desist letter. Not one has been told don't broadcast on YouTube. With the exception of Axanar, not one has been told that you can't do some sort of Kickstarter. Not one has been told that you can't sell your old scripts for your show to try and raise up a little extra, raise some money up to, you know, for to throw back into the production. So a lot of people say, Axanar hit that magic $1 million number, and so that they're worried. And I still got to scratch my head and say, what the heck are you worried about? It's you know, it's self-promotion, admittedly, for the people making it. But at the same time, you know, they're putting out something that a significant number of fans want to see. And they're promising to sort of stay around your rules, which that not to raise money or profit from them. And then the whole issue of profit becomes another issue. But basically, you can't charge people to see this movie. And as long as they stay within that, I don't see how it really hurts Paramount that much. If anything, they're still looking lousy for stopping the fan film bandwagon that really kept Star Trek alive for a long, long time when movies or TV shows weren't running. So we'll have to wait and see. And this is by no means probably the last we've heard of it or might mention it on this show. But it might really define how you not only do fan films, but how you do fan fiction. And a whole T-shirts and all these other little ancillary things that usually don't mean much to a studio, but this might help end up defining what we as a you know, person can do. That we've heard issues of fair use mentioned from time to time, but you know, at what point could we say, oh, you know, wouldn't that be nice if character X did this? You know, at some point, have we just made fan fiction, which is now in violation of copyright? It's going to be interesting, and it might actually end up, like I said, defining what is permissible with a licensed product that is now hitting 50 years old. And I guess I don't know if we want to start stretching into whole copyright law at this point, meaning, you know, expiration of copyrights and stuff like that. But that's been a crazy zoo as well.
Yeah, that's true. It has. It's a quagmire, but you've brought up a lot of the different points. What I like about this one in particular is that the folks behind Axanar are not backing down, which is what I think a lot of people were expecting would happen after a while. But they're really forcing Paramount to really make idiots of themselves, because they're doing all these things, like you said, Gary, that they've never gone after anyone else before. And now that they are, they're doing it, and they're making these quote unquote rookie mistakes of, oh yeah, well, you violate everything. Well, define everything. Yeah, because and it's the same point that all these people that are out there who, you know, make all these claims and then they, you know, will come after somebody that calls them out on it and say, well, you've just committed slander or what, or libel. And I mean, guys, if you go to court, you're going to have to prove that someone criticizing you is wrong. Don't do that. Because all you're doing is playing into their hands. So really, that's a very similar situation that's happening here. I just really find it fascinating that this is going on. And it could have some far-reaching implications. But I have a feeling that the Axanar folks actually might have a pretty good chance of coming out of this with the law on their side.
Well, so, I mean, and they are doing some sort of – I hate to use the term gray things, but you know, part of this is literally they've rented and built a studio that they're planning to occupy for at least, I think, the next 2 years. And its life is well expected to exceed the production of this Axanar feature film. So they end up with, you know, real hard sort of permanent assets. Now there are several other production companies that have that too, but not on quite the professional level that Axanar is going to. Also, there's issues that they are paying out salaries, and then that starts to come into, you know, into this whole profit argument. So, you know, it's not that there aren't legitimate questions to ask Axanar. The question is, why isn't everyone else being asked these things?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, and certainly, I mean, the whole issue of the copyright and forcing them to define it, I mean, I thought was just a brilliant move. Because, you know, yes, I'd heard about the whole issue of the studio and the salaries and sort of eating into that, you know, oh no, it's just a fan film, we're not profiting from it, or, you know, or making a living from it. But that's a separate issue from this whole idea of forcing them to say, you know, okay, you know, exactly which copyrights are we violating? And is it just as simple as, you know, no, if you have a ship that's, you know, that's from the United Federation of Planets, that means that, that you know, no, you're violating. And, you know, that's the part that I'm finding most intriguing to play out in court and get some sort of answer on.
Well, ironically enough, Axanar is based off an old role-playing game that is no longer in business and hasn't been for some time. And so I wonder if it was a company called FASA, and I'm wondering if their rights are being infringed upon, because that's where the majority of the background is actually coming from. So, you know, then now you're dealing with extinct companies. So it continues to complicate things.
Just a little. Let's see. I didn't have necessarily much else to say on this matter or on this week. I think I mentioned during our previous episode that I have been reading the Lords of the Sith book, which is pretty good. I'm about a third of the way through it at this point, but it's entertaining. It's kind of like Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine go on a road trip, for all intent purposes. A little bit different, but it's kind of fun watching them kind of be arch with each other. But let's see. Anything else, Gary, on your list before we move on?
No, nothing really genre-related at the moment. My daughter continues to enjoy Supernatural.
Very good, very good.
I believe that's about it. I don't know if we mentioned last time that the show Gravity Falls had finally wrapped up after...
No, you didn't.
After two seasons and seemed like 5 years worth of actual production,
yes.
It did finally wrap up, and it was, you know, it was sort of nice. And it started off as, you know, two kids going to this town for the summer, and summer ended finally, and they left, and it was it's been quite an enjoyable little show. We became very connected with the characters over the years, so it was sort of sad to see it go. But thankfully, it's only really two seasons long, and it's all on demand, so you can really mainline it really quick if you want. And it really is enjoyable. I'd call it goofy, wholesome things. You definitely can watch it with your family, as it was geared as a kid show. But there's enough content for them to sneak zingers in if you're an adult, that you'll catch it and it'll go over the kids' heads. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've heard a great many good things about Gravity Falls. And I did forget, I shouldn't have, considering I did this just before we started recording tonight. The first episode of the Telltale miniseries game Walking Dead Michonne came out this past week. And I played through the first available episode. And I liked it quite a lot.
No, wait, is that a console game or is that a web game?
Well, it's available on the consoles and I believe on PC and Mac. So you can get it on Steam, for instance, I believe. Okay. But yes, it's like the Walking Dead Season 1, Season 2 games that they've had. But what's different here is that while those other two games are kind of original characters inspired by the comic book, this is actually a tale that takes place within the comic book continuity and focuses on the character of Michonne. Obviously, that's why it's named after her. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's taking place way ahead of the storyline from where it is in the TV show. To my knowledge, at least just having watched the first one, there is nothing to really tell you anything other than the fact that Michonne survives that long. There's no spoilers per se, other than the fact that Michonne survives and is on a kind of solo adventure. So read into that what you will, but she's... not voiced by the same actress as on the show, but in many cases you barely notice that because you're more involved in the story. It's very much like the Walking Dead games that already existed in terms of some of the moral dilemmas and the personal choices that you need to make and the nice little action pieces that they have throughout. It's a little short. It's maybe instead of 2.5 hours, it's maybe an hour and a half. But at the same time, I really enjoy playing it and I'm looking forward to the rest of the game. So... it's recommended for those, especially who like Telltale games in general. It's definitely one of their better ones. It's slightly glitchy here and there, but it was never game breaking to the point where like I had to restart or anything like that. It just kind of hitched up here and there as I was playing initially. Anyway, but that was about it. I know that there is a new Assassin's Creed mobile game that came out this past week that is, I haven't heard a whole lot about, and I haven't gotten a chance to play it yet. So I'll probably be able to report more on that next time. Edmund, how about you? What's on your list?
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you mentioned the Michonne game, because that actually reminded me of something that I had been meaning to bring up, had been forgetting. But for those of you who only know Danai Gurira as Michonne, she is also has this this budding career as a playwright. And in fact, as we speak, her 2009 play Eclipsed was produced back in 2009, but has been revived at the Public Theater in the past year, and it's just been announced that it's going to move to Broadway. It's a play set in war-torn Liberia, focusing on three women living as sex slaves to a rebel commander. So searing subject matter, and I know it's been extremely well received. I first got wind of it just when she was being interviewed, I think, on the PBS NewsHour, but as a playwright, not as Michonne. So it was quite nice to see that other side of her her creative world. I don't think it's been announced exactly when it's going to debut yet. But if anybody is in New York and wants to see another side of Michonne, would be something to check out.
There you go.
And
sounds like a good plan.
And also, just to give you my future diary update, I am now up to episode 11.
Aha. Okay. Very good. I'm trying to remember what happened then, because that was when I started.
Let's just say, yes, our very perceptive detective has shown up, and we have seen a very large hole.
Oh. Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed. Very large hole.
Yes.
Yes, things have gotten interesting in terms of the background of a certain character, I suppose.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. So, I'm sure that you have recognized all of the little things I mentioned last time when it comes to that show.
Oh, absolutely.
I have not been able to finish out Future Diary quite yet. Okay. I hope maybe to get to it this week as well, but we'll see. I think our watch list actually eases up a tad this week, so... maybe I'll get the chance to watch it, but we'll see. I'm hoping it won't be too much longer, because the list of shows that I'm having recommended at this point is starting to grow tremendously. So I need to kind of clear the palette, but also I want to finish it out, because I left it at right when things were climaxing in terms of the story, and I still got the last four or five left to go, and it's like, but I want to see how it finishes. But then, yes, I also have a limited window of a smaller show list for us to try and shove some stuff in there. So we'll see. But hey, by the time that you catch up with the ending, I'll be up with the ending too.
Exactly.
Exactly. Anything else on our list here, guys? Any topics that we want to cover? Edmund, anything more for you?
Unfortunately, unlike you guys, who always seem to be shifting to new books, on my reading list, I've just been continuing on the stuff I've mentioned previously. In the case of Infinite Jest, that's not surprising, since it's over 1,000 pages. I have been continuing to make my bemused and intrigued way through that novel, but still leavening it with Altered Carbon, I'm almost through that, but if they can do an adaptation of Altered Carbon on a par with what they've been doing with The Expanse, that is going to be a very enjoyable differently focused series. This is very much sort of cyberpunk meets neo-noir. It's Humphrey Bogart, if you could take Humphrey Bogart and just download him into different bodies, basically. And speaking of The Expanse, I'm also making my way through that third novel And you know, and yeah, there are certain characters, especially a certain Martian Marine, who are going to be an absolute joy to see on screen, provided they do actually cast her correctly. You know, no, this is a woman who is known throughout the novels for being very attractive, but very capable and large. So I'm rather intrigued, since you know, there's no way they can write around her. She's got to be a major part of the series, and I'm really crossing my fingers and hoping that they do the right thing in terms of the casting. And you know, Gwendolyn Christie would not be the right choice, but somebody on a par in terms of stature and of course, in Gwendolyn Christie's case, her you know, actual looks, as opposed to what they have to do to make her look like Brienne.
Yes, people are always surprised when they see what she actually looks like.
Yes.
Well, if that is it, I'm not sure that we have anything else that's open topic or anything else, so I guess we can wrap this one up slightly early, but that's fine. So, yes, next time we have, like I said, a little bit shorter list, so we might get in a little more depth on some things, and maybe that'll give us time to jump into some other topics as well and other activities. But for now, we're going to go ahead and wrap up the week, so until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.